Do you think that glasses are as geeky as they used to be?
Most people have glasses these days, it seems like.
Yeah, no, you're right. Most people do, but does that make them geeky? I mean...
Well, no, because geeks have to be a minority. Otherwise, it's just normal. And so if glasses are so ubiquitous...
Ubiquitous.
Then that can't be a sign that they're a geek. Now it's just a common thing.
So does that make people without glasses geeks?
Are there any geeks without glasses? I'm sure there must be.
Well, I don't know.
There's LASIK surgery.
Maybe those are the new geeks. People that got LASIK.
It's like having bionic eyes.
True.
It's pretty sci-fi. They shoot lasers into your face. To improve your senses. That's some sci-fi shit right there.
Yeah, that's basically what the bionic man did.
Yeah.
Now, would you want to become the bionic man if you could?
Would it cost $6 million or whatever?
Yeah, but it's not your money. It's not like...
Oh, it's the government money.
Well, yeah, it's the government. The government paid to reconstruct him.
I would feel like I would owe the tax people.
It's only $6 million. I mean...
Well, back when they made him, that was a lot.
That was a lot of money.
Saw much Bionic Man stuff. Was he worthwhile investment?
Well, he could jump.
Were people happy that they spent all that money on this one dude? Or did he, like, spend all his time on yachts like James Bond?
You know, they didn't actually poll the people whether or not they felt like the money was well spent. And you'd think that they would with that kind of investment.
If they make a gritty reboot, that'll be part of it. A census. It'll be a whole, like, political debate.
Yeah, maybe.
A gritty reboot.
If George Lucas redoes it, the movie will only be about what the people think and the political movement behind the scenes.
And there'll be flashlights instead of guns.
I am Philip.
I am Matt.
First we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our rubber.
Now it's time for Next at Bat!
You're listening to Next at Bat, a podcast devoted primarily to improvisation, where Philip Simondet, the creator of the podcast, and myself, Matt McLeod, the host, interview and then perform with local Minneapolis and St. Paul-based improvisers and other artists. Improvisation is the art of making stuff up. Nothing is scripted. Nothing in improv has been performed before or will be performed again. Short-form improv is game-based and has been popularized by shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Long-form improv is story-based, like a play without a script. And this is the type of improv we will perform on this show. After a short interview, our guests will join us for our version of what is known as The Bat, a forum created by Joe Bill, co-founder of the Annoyance Theater. Traditionally, The Bat is a specific form that is performed in front of a live audience, but with the lights out, to simulate a radio broadcast. There will be several scenes in Our Bat, with little or no indication of a new scene occurring, though sound effects and human-made music are often used. Without further ado, let me present Next at Bat with Matt and Philip.
There's a ringtone for you.
that will be my ringtone.
Whenever I call?
Yeah.
All right.
We're here with Geek Out today. How you doing, guys?
Good.
Excellent. For good.
Woo. Cool. We're here with Will Roberts, Brian Pierce, and Christian Unser. And
yes.
You guys want to say hi?
I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
I'm Christian.
And I'm here, as always, with...
Philip Simondet. And you are...
I am Matt McLeod. We are getting mildly smoother.
No, I think that was worse, actually.
It was worse?
Yeah.
The setback from Michael Keaton?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who are the members of Geek Out who are not here?
Yeah.
Oh.
They are many.
We're not going to talk about them today.
Yeah, we have three...
Are you mad at
three
them?
Sevenths of the group here.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is fortunate, because those are both prime numbers.
Right. That is fortunate. That's how I would describe it.
Thank God.
The numerologist in the audience will be safe.
Maria Bartholdi isn't here. Molly Lerman and our coach, James Moore, who's actually also...
And Nate Moore.
And Nate Moore.
Yep. He's just... The forgotten he just breezes member. In and breezes out.
He's the cousin Oliver of the group.
When did you guys form? Like, you guys have been around for a little bit.
Was
anyone remember?
About a year ago. Okay. Facebook tells us it was about a year ago.
Oh, that is.
A little under a year.
That's when we founded the Facebook group, so that should be our... Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had go-go dates in May of last year, right? That was our thing?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That
sounds good.
Sure. Okay.
But yeah, Brian and Molly and I all had met in class and over at Comedy Sports, and then as we just continued to take classes, we encountered kind of everybody else and... decided once classes were wrapping up that we would try to put a group together and see what happened.
So it formed out of the class. How did you guys recruit? I mean, how did you figure out who was going to join the group, or did you recruit?
So I think Christian, you know, after some classes was like, okay, we got to start performing. We got to push ourselves to do this. So we, you know, he asked us and Maria if we were interested. We got together and we were like, okay, let's do this stuff. Who else do we want to bring on? And
yo, Will. Will was a natural choice. Like there was no way that, yeah, we just, I mean, these are the people that, in class we were, I mean, we had class with great people, but for whatever reason, we just really gravitated towards each other in a way that we decided like that it would be fun to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I think in class we enjoyed scenes we had together and, you know, things like that. So just, I mean, kind of how all class groups form. I think people just find somebody, oh, I like you. And
yeah.
I work well with you. And
the chemistry's just there. Right. And so therefore, let's do this thing.
Yeah. Right. And right. What's really nice is James was our teacher for our second class.
Okay.
And then he became our coach and then we just assimilated him into the group.
And so when you were forming the group, how did you decide to go with the geek route?
We went with what we know. We know we're geeks.
I think most of us have, I think some are maybe a little geekier than others, but most of us have some kind of, you know, I think most improvisers probably have some kind of geeky sort of background in their lives. And that just kind of came across and like, we felt like we'd be able to get topics and we'd be able to get things to talk about and it'd be kind of an easy, for lack of a better term, way to come up with some scenes. And you know, we know these characters, we know these situations, at least some of us do on any given week. So so that's kind of how the idea came about.
And right now it's really socially acceptable to be a geek, so that's working for us too.
Well, and it does seem to be, like, when I've seen you guys, the audiences are really invested in, like, every little reference that you guys are making, everything that you pull out. Do you guys feel that when you're on stage?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the, you know, instance, whether it's something that, like, you know they know, or whether it's something you think that only you know. Because if it's something that only you know, and you can't resist making it, then it's less encouraged, and you really have to power through.
Sure.
And the most frustrating thing is when you know you're making a good reference, and no one else in the room knows it.
Sure.
This
is a deep pull.
I know.
Nobody got it.
That was in the sixth episode of the second season of Torchlight. How did you not know that?
Exactly. Exactly. I think, and I think, again, that, you know, we acknowledge this from the beginning, that it helps when the audience, when we do that little, we do a little interview at the beginning of the show where we spend about 5 minutes talking to a member of the audience about their geeky obsession.
Right.
And then that's what we use to generate our scenes.
Okay.
So when the audience has sat through that and heard all of that, and then, you know, we managed to work that into a scene in, let's just say, maybe a clever way if we're doing it correctly, they automatically like it. And that just makes it a lot easier to, you know, get them on your side and have a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the evolution of our show from the beginning has been, at first we were like, okay, we'll get a topic and the show will be about that. But then I think we've realized it's more about the audience members' geekiness and not the topic. You know, it's why do they geek out about it? How do they geek out?
The popularity of your group. And your group is popular. Like, people have told me that they geek out about geek out. They have actually used that phrase.
Good.
Oh, that is so validating.
It's true.
I hope we can do a show about us.
Oh, man.
Everyone pick a geek you want to play.
But do you think it's because I've never seen this, and you can speak to this if this has ever happened, but I've never seen you make fun of your topics. You treat it with care and you treat it with integrity. Everybody's little obsessions, whether or not they're yours.
Well, I think it's part of, I mean, obviously you don't want to bring someone up on stage and make fun of something that is, I mean, pretty dear to them, or at least that they're like, you know, that they really care about. Especially because, I mean, we are ourselves, and in some cases very much geeks. Some of us very, very much so. I mean, it'd be like a betrayal to really just sort of like make fun of it. I think sometimes we'll make fun of Twilight, I think, but no one's geeked out about Twilight, so it's okay. It's kosher.
Well, I think that, you know, what we try to do is acknowledge when something is pretty crazy that somebody says.
Sure.
And not act like that's perfectly normal that they I mean, they're really geeking out about this. And we try to just acknowledge that in a way that's just like, wow, this person's really into this. And try to keep the sort of the any sort of mocking that we might be doing at sort of that level. Like, okay, can you believe how into this this person is? But you're absolutely right. Like, our goal is not to make fun of them. I mean, just for me personally, like, they volunteered the information. I don't want right. to pick on them for right. being a part of our show. Like, that's not the goal.
Well, and I think it's pretty, I guess, antithetical to a comedy club. Most people think they go to a comedy club, they sit in the audience. If they volunteer information, a lot of people expect to be made fun of. Mm-hmm. And it's very comforting to know that they can trust the group that they're telling that to. And you guys do seem to take care of that information.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about the, at least the Minneapolis improv scene, is that we don't make fun of the audience members, which I think is cool, because people don't want to come if they're right. scared of being made right. fun of. You know.
To that end, a lot of people are still afraid to sit in the front seats.
Yeah, and just speaking as a shy person or socially awkward person, the act of entering a room and then sitting in the front, I mean, that's not so much a it doesn't feel like you're part of a collective at that point, you know, whereas once you're in the show and you're, you know, you've called upon people and you've explained the thing you are geeky about, that's sort of being part of a collective, where if I walk in and sit in the front, it's like I'm declaring something. It's like I'm setting myself apart from everyone.
Sure.
I don't know. That's how it feels to me. That's actually what goes through my head. And so, yeah. And if you're and I go to a lot of shows alone because I don't have enough friends who want to go to improv with me all the time.
Aww. God, no, this is terrible.
And then
if you want to go to a show with Will Roberts, go to Next at Bat.
Do it.
It'll be fun. Smells great. We'll get, just so everyone knows.
We'll get some Puma Cola from the bar. That's my drink. But yeah, there was one time I was just sitting in the front of a Splendid Things show, and everyone else was at the back, and it was just me in front. And Eric Noble goes, well, I see you're all sitting at the back, except for this murderer.
One good thing about the feedback that I've heard from our audience participants actually is that they've had a lot of fun watching this come to life on stage. So yeah. that's good to hear, that we didn't ruin what they geek out about.
Yep.
I think that the, you know, the basic tenet of improv, yes, and encourages cooperation. It encourages a movement away from negativity. And
sure.
It encourages mm-hmm. movement towards the positivity. And again, from what I've seen from your group, you guys are terminally positive. You guys are just up there having fun. The scenes are always in a positive, energetic slant. How do you maintain that sort of energy when you're on stage?
Well, one thing that helps is we are such a big group. You wouldn't know it today, but we're such a big group that there's all that energy up there, that there are, you know, so many people ready to do something, and we can say, hey, everyone come out here and have a big group scene. And with that many people out there, like, you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think we end up, for whatever reason, just enjoying the topics that we get. And that comes across in, you know, not only interest in the topic, but like, I think our excitement as improvisers, and like, we have a lot to work with here, and mm-hmm. that's good. And that helps to keep that energy going the whole time. No one's ever floundering.
I'm sorry.
And overall, as a group, I think we just encourage each other's positive parts.
Yep.
And in most cases, are like just silly, dumb parts, which I love. That, yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely some, I mean, as the group, as we've done more of these shows, there's some go-to things that, you know, people, we always know that that's going to get a, you know, some kind of reaction. Not a crutch, but just like, we know that this person is really going to be into this, or this person's really going to like this bit. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, just being comfortable with each other and what you're going to do. And, you know, like, Will and I have almost made out a number of times just because it just ends up happening that way.
In the green room.
Yeah. And then we went out on stage. But yeah, it just, I mean, just kind of knowing that it doesn't matter what you do. You know, as long as we're kind of revolving around this topic, we're probably going to have a good time together, at least.
Do you think that comes from the short form background, that you're almost like building your own invisible game and playing within that game?
Man, I guess I'd never thought about it as short form type thing, because I've never studied short form. I was in a group.
I haven't either.
I was in a group in college that did a lot of amount of short form. But like, I mean, I sort of view it as like, I mean, a deconstruction type thing where, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just you draw something from something we have material for this thing, and we're going to draw from it. So that's how I view it. And I don't know. That is sort of a short form thing too.
It blurs. We do a lot of we just sort of end up doing a lot of runs where we have like one character that's getting bounced around between all of us usually at some point, and that's just us, trying to get a bunch of the things in that we've heard, and using those to come up with some ideas. But we always talk about that's one of our games. Like that's one of the things that we do. Without even talking about it or trying to do it, it's just like, oh, I think this would be good, and this would be good, and this would be good. And we end up with this little 5-minute chunk in the middle of our thing that it was basically us just playing a game. And then it just kind of, that goes away for a bit. And, we probably do, without even trying, bring in some of that structure from a quick game to propel whatever we're doing.
How do you rehearse for going on stage and doing what you do, especially since you do have those like breakdowns in the middle of the set where you do have these like quick hit scenes and stuff like that, which are hilarious, by the way. How do you rehearse for this stuff?
We usually just pick someone from our group and interview them about one of the things that we geek out about.
Okay.
Things that we know won't come up. And then you just practice with
sadly.
It. Sadly.
Sadly, they won't come up.
Yeah.
But we did make the mistake early on of rehearsing with Batman. And then we were like, that'd be kind of cheating if we did it again.
So, yeah. We haven't had taken Batman since. We talked a little bit about this before, but as our format has evolved a little bit, we really initially stuck to like pop culture. We just want to do pop culture. Mm-hmm. And we had a set where we did, was it cooking? Was that the one that tripped us up? So we did cooking, and it just wasn't as funny as the whatever the pop culture one we had done the week before
was. I believe it was Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we just decided to try something different and felt like that just wasn't enough. And everyone's scrambling for something and just trying to dig into their cooking knowledge. And it felt kind of flat. So we sort of decided, all right, let's just kind of stick to these more pop culture things. But as we've done more and more of these, that's gone away. We did one of the best ones that I remember doing was about candy making.
Yeah.
And it just ended up being really funny. And we know less about candy making than we do about cooking. And that still managed to come across. So I think we just kind of had to, we were maybe leaning a little bit too much on the sort of built-in pop culture reference and when we really just need a topic. To talk sure. about.
Another thing that's helpful for us is, well, for the Batman thing that we rehearsed, we had this crazy thing where Alfred ran off with Catwoman and had an affair, and it kind of dawned on me, we can do whatever we want with this universe. It doesn't have to be confined to what we know or what actually happened. We can do whatever we want, and that's really freeing as well.
Really everything in the world is fair game as long as it's like a popular thing. So like we can always have Star Wars in our set. I've been Wolverine on multiple occasions.
Wolverine and Loki.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was Loki once. Good times. As long as it's well known, it's fair game. That's my perspective. So we can do whatever we want. We can write the best fanfic.
Well, I think we established with the audience at the beginning, like, this is what we're doing, and we're all excited about these topics. And so bringing in pop culture and bringing in other elements is where it's allowed, in our set from the beginning.
And one of the most fun things for me is during our Downton Abbey show, we were just in a related scene, we were listing off a whole bunch of PBS shows. So I took that to being Doctor Who and bringing the TARDIS back to Downton Abbey time.
Yeah,
nice.
And then it was just all of us trying to remember PBS shows. Like you could see everybody. what are we? Nova.
Upstairs, downstairs. Right.
and that's fun too because you can see us all trying to come up with, more tangential stuff for that topic. That I mean, I know of Downton Abbey because of pop culture. I don't know it because I've ever watched it.
Sure.
But I get. What it's where it's coming from. So that's the perspective I had. But then when we did one about StarCraft, the video game StarCraft, which I know all kinds of things about, and like Will did too.
Yeah.
But I think that was it for the people in the group that knew anything about it at all. And it still ended up being a really fun set. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what topic we get. Someone's going to have something to contribute. And then if you're not familiar with the topic, you're going to be able to come up with a million other things that make it even funnier.
Well, I remember Molly in the StarCraft set made stars during the craft time, which were StarCraft.
Right, exactly.
So
how do you feel like you guys have, I mean, you guys have been around for a year, and how do you feel like you've grown as a group? I know you kind of changed your form, you changed your outlook. Besides those sorts of changes, how do you feel like you've changed as a group, like the dynamics?
One thing that we're working on is, because there are seven of us and most of our sets have been a half hour or less, it can be just a mad dash sometimes. So we really want to focus on having more two-person scenes, mm-hmm. and having more emotional grounding.
I mean, a larger group makes it harder to be a part of everything that you want to be a part of.
Well, and I mean, you guys play with such high energy. I got to imagine that like everybody is chomping at the bit, like they want to get out there. And
we all have ideas.
Everybody has ideas. And they want to express those. I mean,
and we're pretty good at messing with each other. Mm-hmm. Like we've gotten good at making a game out of that, I think.
I mean, one of the things we've talked about is again, everyone's coming up with good ideas, and I mean, having to actually, rein that in a little bit, because there'll be a good two-person thing going with an idea, and then somebody else comes in with their idea, and it was a great idea, but it kind of messed up that scene.
Right.
As much as an improvised scene can be messed up, but save that for the next scene, and those kinds of lessons that we're just, I mean, I'm excited I thought of something, but at the same time, there's seven of us and it's not a competition. I mean, we're not trying to, well, you were on for two and then you were out for one. And
right.
Then, I mean, we're not doing that. But at the same time, I mean, you're there, you want to do something. And, and how do we just balance that when something really good is going on? But we just can't devote, 15 minutes to that really good scene for our group to work, that'll work for another group, but it just doesn't work for us. So how do we balance that? That's what we're working on.
Yeah, that's got to be difficult. Well, for one thing, I bet you guys could handle an hour well. Do you think you probably could?
Ooh, well, we'd have to see how it goes at first.
I think that would come back to us just slowing down and spending more time with what we do come up with. Mm-hmm. Because we come up with some good stuff that you only see briefly because we have more good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not all good, let's be honest, but at the same time, I'm sorry, Brian's right. It's all
we don't have bad shows.
But I think it would just be a question of just slowing down and spending more time with our ideas.
And even with the interview, sometimes we're like, we've got to cut this off.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot, but we got to do improv too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think I do agree. We haven't discussed doing a longer set together yet. I think it would come down to us slowing down a little bit at least. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, when you go, we go pretty fast. And when you go that fast, it's somewhat easy to burn everything right away. So I mean, that would be key to a longer set for us for sure.
Yeah. But that's where we utilize how many people we have, and
right,
not it's
right.
not as much of a, I wouldn't say it's a hindrance, but it's definitely like, there are days where you're not getting out as much as you'd like or as many ideas as you had, just because the logistics of how it all works. So, you just have to deal. We just have to deal with that and just try to make what we do count.
Because of how fast you guys do move, is it ever difficult to pay attention to what's happening on stage?
Honestly,
when you're on the back line, I mean, I'm sorry.
I feel personally that I tend to be pretty good at paying attention to what's going on stage. I try to react pretty quickly to what's going on, and I mean, because we have a ton of third, fourth, or fifth person entrances, so I'm always on the lookout for that.
Where are we all out here?
Yeah, exactly. So we're sort of always on the lookout for that, and I don't know. Yeah, just following the scene.
And one thing that helps us is doing an interview. We're already listening, like we're already actively in there, like, okay, what's going on? So we're in that mindset already when we're on the sideline.
I usually end up doing the interviews just because that's something I enjoy doing, and I've actually had to say to myself, you need to pay attention to this, because I'm finding like I'm thinking about my next question, or I'm thinking about something else, and then I get to the improv and I go, wait, what did they say about all those things? So it's, yeah, it's just actively like paying attention to everything that's going on, and trying not to duplicate or come up with. I mean, some of the stuff, we actually had this in the Scrabble. A lot of us came out and played Scrabble in that set, and it was funny, and you know, it, but at the same time, it's like, was there other stuff we could have done
sure.
with that?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in between the big things that you can hold on to. I understand. Philip and I were actually talking about that almost exact same thing. Initially, when we came up with this, the idea was that the interview would feed the, you know, fill the pot for the bat. And being that I do the majority of the interview, I'm not paying attention at all to the filling of the pot.
And I just don't listen anyway. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting in my corner not listening.
See, now that's a lie, because he pulls stuff out that in every single bat that is like, oh my, and I only catch it on the when I listen back to it.
It's in the subconscious. I don't think it happens every time, but
yeah.
I mean, it's
there.
It's magic. It's subconscious stuff.
Yeah.
Filling the pot.
All right. Well, at this point in time, I would like to throw it over to my co-host Philip for a new segment that we have called Philip's Corner.
That's right, everybody. This is Philip's Corner. It's Philip's turn to ask questions. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stare into your eyes awkwardly and think of a question, and then you are going to save the day by coming up with an incredibly insightful answer or story and make it look good. I will ruin it and you will fix it. Philip's Corner. Will.
Yes.
What part of Florida is your favorite part of Florida?
Universal Islands of Adventure. If you've ever been on the Hulk coaster, anyone been on the Hulk coaster?
No.
Hulk coaster is awesome. It's got a terrible animation in the line. Like they've got an animation of the Hulk, like, and it's like the Hulk newspaper stories, and it's like one guy's like, the Hulk's not so bad, he saved my kid, he can't be all bad, and then like Thunderbolt Ross is like, run and get the Hulk, and the animation is terrible and the voice acting is bad, and I don't know, the first time I was there that line was like an hour and a half long. It was totally worth it. I wrote it like three times. And basically, it starts out, like, the idea is it's Bruce, this is a long story.
Yay.
It's Bruce Banner trying to put himself through some gamma new gamma tube of some sort to cure himself of the Hulk. And so, like, you're going, like, you get in the coaster and it's like, this is not safe. You will be exposed to gamma radiation, tourist. And then, and then, like, you start going up the hill, and like a normal coaster, it goes up a hill and you're still in the tube. And then you hear, like, Banner, he's like, all right, everything's looking normal. Uh-oh, no. And then, like, magnets start propelling you upwards. So you're like, rah! And then you go right into a corkscrew and you go on this really bitchin' coaster. And it's awesome. The Hulk coaster. I'm all about the Hulk coaster. They got the Spider-Man 3D ride. Back when I was, I haven't been since the medieval part, the wizarding. It's now the wizarding world of Harry Potter. It used to be just generic fantasy world, and they had the Dueling Dragons roller coaster, which is an inverted roller coaster, which I had in Roller Coaster Tycoon. and I always wanted to ride that. It was a fantasy come true. True story. I rode the Ice Dragon, not the Fire Dragon. Ice is way better than fire. And then they had Jurassic Park, which was pretty cool. I actually, the rides in the Jurassic Park section, I like less than the actual atmosphere of the Jurassic Park section. Because it's like, I don't know, with the atmosphere, with the just being there, it's like you're in an operational Jurassic Park, minus most of the big dinosaurs. But, I mean, you see some of them, and they don't move much because they're not real dinosaurs. Oh, there's Dr. Seuss Land, and there's, like, Universal Cartoon Land. They have, like, Dudley Do-Right's Log Ride. Christian is giving me the most facetious look. But those aren't that big of a deal to me. I didn't know anything about the Universal Cartoons. I didn't go on the Green Eggs and Ham ride that was aimed for kids. Is there a ride for Green Eggs and Ham, or do they just serve Green Eggs and Ham? I don't know. But that's my favorite part.
They're really
of Florida.
Curious whether or not you like them.
Yeah. Yes.
For the record, you ask Will Roberts where he's born, he doesn't have an answer. You ask him about roller coasters, you get a thesis.
Also, I would like to, this was a separate occasion, but I did go to the actual Universal Studios theme park. Back to the Future ride, awesome. Sad it's no longer in operation. The Jaws ride scared the crap out of me. I had not seen Jaws, but I am afraid of the ocean and sharks. So, like, That scared me a lot.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's all the time we have.
How long is this podcast?
Apparently really, really long. All right, you guys ready to do a bat?
Yeah.
Sure. Can I use the bathroom? That mellow yellow goes straight through me. It's caffeine. It's a diuretic. Are you putting this in, right? Next
at bat! Would you miss your hands?
Yes.
Would you miss one more than the other?
You know?
Say goodbye to one of them, if you had to, right now.
Oh, left hand. You know, ever since I had that accident with my ear piercings, you've just always had that scar, so I guess it's time for you to... Wait, but you have history. Right hand, you may be my dominant hand, and we've had some good times together, but I guess it's time to say goodbye.
Make a decision. Right hand's gone?
I'll always love you, right hand.
You'd really say goodbye to me that easily?
Oh, I'm sorry, right hand, but it's either you or your brother. Now, you know these are difficult decisions.
You're not getting rid of me.
We go so far back, both of you. How could I ever choose one of you?
We have history together. Look at these scars.
Ah!
And I've been your friend even on rainy days.
Stop.
I'm friendly too when you want to feel like a stranger's doing it.
You remember when you had to slap that person? I was the person who did that.
You were so strong and confident, like I never knew I could be.
Keep me left hand. When we play guitar, I do all the work making the chords. You can strum the strings with a stub.
You
see?
That's what I think about that.
That felt good.
Hey, Jeffrey, can we skip the bonfire tonight?
Really?
Yeah, of course we... Oh, you meant...
Yeah,
you meant
I'll
that,
take
Jeffrey?
Your input too, Tommy.
Oh, did you...
Yeah.
Sorry, I respond to Jeffrey sometimes.
Yeah, no, sometimes I like...
No, we all go Jeffrey. By our middle names. It's cool.
Yeah, I'm Tommy Jeff.
And I'm Jeffrey Tommy.
Mm-hmm. For our retreat tonight, can we just skip the bonfire?
It's the best part.
No, but there's something I haven't told you about my dark, dark past. Every woman I've been affiliated with has been burned to death in a bonfire. So it brings back feelings.
Oh my God, that's terrible, Geoffrey Thomas.
It's terrible that you didn't tell us something about your dark, dark past when we all promised each other when we became best friends in the Best Friends Club that we were going to tell each other everything at that time, and you didn't.
I know, but I thought that you were talking only about, like, the good, positive, upbeat things and, you know, the dark things would just stay in the dark.
I told you about that time that my grandma stabbed me with a screwdriver.
But I was there, so that doesn't count.
It was dark.
Well, I think that it's worth something now that I'm telling you about the time that I was with Samantha and I made her wear roller skates and make me s'mores.
And she... Roller skated in the fire?
Mm-hmm. She burned to death alive.
Bit of an oxymoron there, Geoffrey.
Yeah. Well, she was dead, but then, you know, the EMT people came, and it was good for a little bit, but then no.
Carl, get in here. You won't believe this one. All I see is roller skates sticking out of the fire.
My God. I'm Carl Thomas. He's Thomas Carl.
I'm Thomas Carl.
Next time, call me Inspector Thomas and call him Inspector Carl.
Got it.
If you guys could just get out of the way, I'm still trying to make my s'mores over here.
I didn't realize there were s'mores involved, sir. We'll be out of your hair in just a minute.
I'd really appreciate that.
Look, those handprints that he has on his hands are the same ones that are on her back.
This is amazing. We're solving crime, too.
Man, those are some resilient handprints.
We are amazing EMT people.
Maybe they should make a television show about us.
This week on Fox,
Mystery Doctor.
Doctor of Mystery.
Doctor of Mystery, this little boy fell off a cliff, but was he pushed, and can you save him?
Have you checked him for handprints?
Oh my goodness, Mystery Doctor, his clothes, they are covered in handprints.
Mystery solved! Next case!
Mystery Doctor, I need you to sew up my arm after I was shot in it, but also, I will not tell you where I hid the $10,000 I stole from the bank.
Why were you shot in your arm?
Because I was robbing- Hey!
Almost solved the mystery!
You'll have to try harder than that, Mystery Doctor. I'm truly your greatest nemesis yet.
What'd you do this morning?
I got a gun to rob the... Hey! And then I checked my hiding... Hey!
Can I see your day planner?
All right. Here's where it says where I'm hiding that... Oh, wait a minute!
So close.
Mystery Doctor, you are truly the greatest crime solver I've ever encountered. But please, stitch my arm. I'm bleeding to death.
All right. But I'm gonna charge you for this. Do you have any money?
I have $10,000. Oh no, mystery doctor, you've done it again. I'll turn myself in.
Mystery solved.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, mystery doctor.
Honey, can you turn the air conditioner up, please? I'm sweating.
I don't know, I'm freezing over here.
What?
Yeah, it's like an igloo.
Like an igloo sauna, just melting from the inside out. It's so hot in here. Turn up the air conditioning, please, honey.
Maybe you could just step outside.
It's like 100 degrees outside.
Reflecting upon my comment to tell you to step outside wasn't the most astute, because then I'd also be outside. That's what a pair of handcuffs will do to you. You're just linked to someone for eternity when you have handcuffs on. So maybe you could just take a nap.
It's too hot to sleep, honey.
Maybe I could just get chloroform. Yep, here we go. Yeah.
Vacuum cleaner salesman.
And cleaner vacuum salesman with him.
You got cleaner vacuums, a vacuum cleaners?
We can sell you both of them. Oh, there's two of you here. We can sell you each one.
She looks very sleepy.
It happens sometimes when the heat, you know.
Yeah, this is like an igloo in here.
I was just thinking that.
Thank you. I feel validated right now.
You sure she's okay?
She's great. Super.
All right, well,
which one is she? Great or super?
Oh.
Super great, one word.
Something's fishy about this guy. Maybe we should call in.
Don't call the mystery doctor.
Please don't call the mystery doctor.
Mystery doctor, what it looks like we have here is a man who's handcuffed to his wife and then possibly chloroformed her. Either way, she's unconscious and needs saving, and this mystery needs solving. Now you'd better stitch him up quick. Otherwise, I'll take your badge and your medical license.
Maybe you could solve the mystery of why it's so hot and cold in here.
This is too much for mystery doctor. I'm out.
Oh, well, I guess it's time for the chief doctor sergeant to shine.
Chief doctor sergeant, Thursdays at 7.
I finally got my own spinoff. I've waited so long for this. Perhaps it was so hot in here for her because she had a fever. And the fever made her pass out. Therefore, we have arrested an innocent man. My God, Mystery Doctor almost blew it. And I almost played right along. Luckily, it's time for Chief... I forgot my title.
Chief, will you solve all of my food-related mysteries? I ordered a pizza a half hour ago. Where is it?
Chief, is on the case. Vroom, vroom.
Chief,
there it is. A pizza delivery truck. In this city, there can only be so many of them. This city being New York. Excuse me, Mr. Driver.
Yeah?
Where you been for the last 30 minutes?
I've been delivering pizzas.
Uh-huh.
Do you need help, Chief? It is me, your sidekick. Chief.
Thank you, my Navajo friend. Perhaps you can help me with this infuriating pizza delivery man.
I don't know why you said that. Now I'm just gonna drive off.
All right, Chief, get in the sidecar.
Of course.
Time for a thrilling motorcycle car chase. Shake your fist, Chief, shake your fist. You got any nunchaku?
I have bow and arrow.
Oh, that's even better.
I will take out his tires. Thwap.
And quickly avoid the spinning car.
Alright, what's the big idea? I was just trying to deliver some pizzas.
Not fast enough, were you?
No.
What else is in those pizza boxes?
Pepperoni.
Pepperoni.
Onions.
Onions.
Black olives.
Black olives.
Cocaine.
Cocaine! Well done, Chief.
No, that's on our menu.
Chief.
Good job.
I am Chief. I mean, I did a good job, too.
You did a good job, Chief.
That's on our menu.
Well, honey, I just don't know what I'm going to have for dinner. There's just so many choices on the menu. I see pepperoni, I see sausage, and look here, they've even got cocaine.
I prefer my pizza usually a little less illegal, but I don't know it is Wednesday night. Maybe we can live a little.
So have you guys decided what you want yet?
I was wondering what kind of cocaine it is.
Oh, let me...
Is it freshly ground?
Is it organic? That's important to us.
It is.
Is it made in the USA?
I'm going to have to check with the chef.
Do they have a question about my cocaine?
Yes, they have a lot of questions. They're wondering if it's American.
They must be stupid. Miracle cocaine is the worst.
Yeah, I thought so. So it is.
You know what I did for a living before I come here? Yeah, I slapped mules across the face and told them to go faster across the Mexican border.
Well, that's what I thought you did, but I wasn't sure.
This hand, it is tested.
The right one?
The right hand. I cut off my left hand in a choice. I had to choose.
Sure.
You should have heard them talk.
So it is British cocaine.
It is Colombian.
It's Colombian. Colombian. Cocaine. Colombian.
Colombia.
It's from Colombia?
Colombia.
Oh, hey, but, waiter. Hey, chef. Get back to work and make a good pizza.
Yes, sir.
Huh. Well, I don't know. I like to buy American. I mean, let's support the unions when we're going to buy cocaine
it's
pizza,
from the District
right?
of Columbia.
Oh.
Would you say that it is fresh?
Oh, yeah. This is the freshest.
Now, what if I got extra pepperoni and cocaine on the side?
You could do that.
That's okay?
Yeah. Do you want us to just dust the crust?
Could we just get a bowl of cocaine for dipping?
You can do that.
What do you think, honey?
I need to make sure it's vegan.
Do you want me to mix it with nacho cheese?
I don't think that's vegan.
It's nacho cheese.
Let's live a little. It is Wednesday night.
That's true. Bring us your finest bowl of cocaine with nacho cheese.
You
Thank
got
you.
It.
Thank you. And a Diet Coke.
What, do you want to fucking kill yourself?
Ugh, those assholes out there. Just like looking at us.
Yep. I'm going to roll over and show them my junk again.
I'm going to break out and murder the lot of them.
You say that every week. I'm going to break out
and murder
the lot of them.
I'm going to do it this time. I could go for that blonde over there. I'm going to do it.
God, you're never getting out of here.
It's going to happen.
Horn dog.
You still have that girlfriend at the San Diego Zoo?
Oh, yeah. And
What's her name again?
Her name is Krishindra.
It's beautiful. That's
a beautiful
Yeah,
name.
That's the first thing that attracted me to her.
What'd she like to do?
She likes to breathe.
Meanwhile, at the San Diego Zoo.
Hey, Krishindra, can you tell me more about that boyfriend you have?
Sure. He's so sweet. He really enjoys my breathing.
You love breathing.
What does he do? What's he do like all day?
He breaks out of his cage often.
Really?
And he eats blondes.
Oh, you like the bad boys.
I do.
You're okay with him eating blondes?
Well, no, I'm not really okay with it. At least that's what I tell him.
You're the worst.
No, you are.
Oh, stop it.
You ladies just love to hear these stories.
Well, we don't have boyfriends at other zoos like you. You're so lucky. We have to live vicariously through you.
Carrier pigeon.
There's a message for you, Andrew.
Let me read it out loud in his voice.
Dear Krishindra, I miss you lots. I broke out so many times this week and ate so many blondes. Thanks for understanding that. Keep breathing. Love me.
Oh my God, he's the best.
So jealous. Yes.
Where'd you meet him?
I met him when he crossed state lines and broke into the truck that was transporting me.
Oh, my God. So romantic. Such a romantic meeting.
Like Romeo and Juliet.
I know. And right when we were copulating for the first time, he got tranked in the butt.
Oh, just like Romeo.
Hey, Spielberg, I have a really good idea here to share with you. Let's do a remake of Romeo and Juliet, except instead of dying at the end, they start to make out and Romeo gets tranked in the ass.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Well, you know, I was thinking for Romeo, maybe we could get someone who is young and hip, like maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I like it. Let's see a screen test right now.
A toast to engrossing death. Here's to our love. And then I drink it, right?
I'm old.
No, that's good. Could you just I think Mr. Spielberg really wants to just see your range. Could you give me some,
and you really want to see how you react alongside Kristen Stewart as Juliet.
Oh, she was a vampire.
I was, but now I'm Juliet.
Vampires are so cold. Tonight's forecast. A freeze.
See what I did there? It's a little improv.
That's good. That's
I don't get it. That might be before I was born.
Let's go back. Let's pretend that you guys just met. You feel a connection. Let's see if we can see that.
What page is this on?
This is on page 3 of your side.
And guys, just remember that Steven Spielberg really wants to have this be a modern retelling with Tim Burton references.
Oh, well, he should have written them into the script.
Just go with it, Case 2. Just okay. Go with it.
All right. I'm going to show off my incredible range.
Action.
Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
I hope I do not return home to find it is taken over by apes, like the time he remade Planet of the Apes.
It's good. It's really good.
Was that good?
Yep.
Did you get my passion in that scene?
I did. You're really great. I don't think it's going to get any better.
No, I think that's perfect. Yeah, that's Oscar-worthy there, guys. I'm not just pandering to you. That's Oscar.
I saw screen takes, and I love them.
Oh, good.
I want them both.
The casting was brilliant.
Who's playing Mercutio? The movie hinges on Mercutio.
I thought maybe Gilbert Gottfried.
So, Romeo, I'm your enemy, right? Because I'm one of the Capulets.
That was perfect. Gilbert captured Mercutio. The Queen Mab speech was my favorite. And then finally... let's have Sylvester Stallone as the prince.
Yeah, so it was a funny thing, and I mean I don't know anything about the world, but I shot Rambo 4, and it was in Burma, and you know, Burma's a war zone. And you say you didn't like the expendable world, it's your problem.
I can't find that in the script. I'm lost.
Okay. Well, it looks like we're going to probably have to subtitle him, but I love it.
Thank you.
Can't work like this.
This is a dream role to work with an up-and-coming. To work with an up-and-coming actor.
It's all of your movies were made before my time, so I don't really know who you are.
Didn't you see Bullet to the Head?
No one did.
Did you see Bullet to the Head?
No one saw that.
You want to know the most amazing thing?
Shoot.
Hit me.
Every single one of those parts, Meryl Streep.
Dun, 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 dun.
Next at bat!
And that's our show. Special thanks to Geek Out. Thank you to Will Roberts, Brian Pierce, and Christian Unser. We had a lot of fun with you guys. If you want to see Geek Out coming up soon, you can see them at Improv-A-Go-Go at Huge Theater. That's Huge Theater at 31st in Lindale in Minneapolis. Improv-A-Go-Go is on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. They'll be up on April 14th, 21st, and 28th. And if you want to learn more about Geek Out, please go to www.facebook.com/geekoutimprov.
If you are a Game of Thrones geek, you'll probably like my latest music video. Search for Game of Thrones Will Make Her Horny on YouTube. If you're a Kurt Vonnegut geek, you should buy this book that I have a short story published in. It's called So It Goes, A Tribute to Kurt Vonnegut. That's available on Amazon, both in hard copy and an ebook. And you can see me in Stage Match this Friday.
And Stage Match is over at the Brave New Workshop Student Union at 2605 Hennepin Avenue South. And you'll see me over at Stage Match 2. However, I don't have my dates yet, so I won't be able to tell you when I'm going to be doing that anytime soon. By the way, Phillip's video is also on Funny or Die. You can check it out there. You can see me up at Improv-A-Go-Go on this Sunday and next Sunday with Cubicle, and that's Josh Awind, Max Leibowitz, and Kevin Albertson. And then you can also see me on Huge Wednesdays at Huge Theater every Wednesday this month and next month up through the end of May with A Night Out, and that's Joe Halverson, Carolyn Blomberg, Tanya Albert, Max Maliga, and Andy Katsung, as well as myself.
Please do keep up with us, Next at Bat, on Facebook and Next at Bat Podcast at Gmail. We do love hearing from you and have incorporated some of your suggestions into the show, so please talk to us.
That's true. And you can check us out on iTunes. Please rate and review, subscribe. It helps us out a lot. So thank you very much. We have a big surprise for you guys in store this coming week. It is Bat Appreciation Week, and so make sure you keep tabs on our Facebook page because it'll be a pretty cool thing. Until next time, we'll see you here.